to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. I'm pointing, it's rude, but I don't care. That is Nick Wright. This is the team. We got a stacked show coming your way today. Danny Ainge doesn't want to hear any more about LeBron James.
Shouldn't watch this show then.
Any excuse to say Danny Ainge.
Absolutely.
There's my
excuse. Actually in the show for good reason today, though.
Yeah, a real reason.
Absolutely.
Unlike me bringing it up for no reason at all. Also, people are hating on the Cowboys. That's nothing new. We've been saying that for a long time. Mm-hmm. We'll let you know why. We have got 3 hours to tackle all those stories, plus my team England out of the World Cup.
Yes.
Lots to get to. But we are going to start with...
That's a nice dress.
LeBron James, thank you very much. I would have paused the whole intro for that. Hey, if the Warriors were a thorn in LeBron James' side before, you know when the Cavs and the Warriors faced each other in the finals the last four seasons? Well, if they were a thorn before, they'll be a full-blown cactus now. With LeBron on the Lakers, he'll have to face Golden State a lot earlier than the finals and a few more times. And Lakers general manager Rob Pelinka knows the road to glory goes through Golden State.
If your goal is to win a championship, you've got to look at the way the champs are assembled and how you can give yourself the best chance, you know, to take them down. It's not the sole focus or the sole goal, but it's certainly part of the equation. And, you know, Irvin and I had a conversation and, you know, LeBron echoed this sentiment that I think to try to play the Warriors in their own game is a trap. No one's going to beat them at their own game. And so that's why we wanted to add these elements of sort of defense and toughness and depth and try to look at areas where we'll have an advantage.
CC, so much of some of the top teams' intention going into the season is how to beat the Warriors and what kind of game they need to play. Mm-hmm. What kind of team do the Lakers need to build around LeBron in order to compete with the Golden State Warriors?
I like what they're doing. I like the fact because I've told Nick this the last couple seasons that I didn't see a team. And LeBron specifically, he put a lot of shooters around him. I didn't think that a team could beat Golden State at their own game. And then the Houston team was put together. And you could start to see that the numbers and how much they improved defensively. So it just wasn't the offensive end, but the way they played, the style for which they played, that was as close to Golden State with the type of offense and the stars that they had. As far as LeBron is concerned, I'm with the Lakers. You're not going to be able to get enough young athletic shooters, because that's what the problem is. If you try to put shooters on the court, right now the shooters in the NBA, they're typically older guys, can only play 20 to 25 minutes, and when they go down to the other part of the court, they are a liability. And we forget, or we don't talk about it enough, we can't forget, Golden State, they're an outstanding defensive team. So you just can't try to chase after them from the three-point line. And I like the way Magic is approaching this because Magic saw firsthand. When Magic and Pat Riley and them created Showtime, people in the NBA was like wondering, how are we going to be able to beat that? So a lot of teams, unsuccessfully, you know what they said? We're going to run with them, which Magic said, I'd love for you guys to be able to do that because no one can do that better than us. So I could see why him and Pelinka would be like, listen, this is not going to work. We're not going to be able to get enough. If Steph and Klay are the best two shooters we've ever had, Nick, how are you going to ever build? And then they added Durant?
Right.
How are you ever going to be able to match that type of firepower?
Well, and so here's the thing, and this is what can be a little frustrating if you're a fan of a team that's not the Warriors, is what is Golden State's style? And I say that, you might be like, oh, they pass the ball a ton, good shot, great shot, perfect shot.
You mean because when you say we'll beat them at their own game,
at their own
what's
game,
their game?
But I will pick various really good teams in basketball and ask you if the Warriors could be better at their style than they are at their own. Like, if you want to play ISO ball, well, the Warriors do have Kevin Durant, who famously just shoot over a chair. If you want to play ISO ball, they have one of the best ISO players in the world in Durant. You want to play bully ball? Oh, now they have the best offensive big man in the league in DeMarcus Cousins. You want to play a pick and roll style? How does a KD Boogie or a KD Dre pick and roll work for you? You want to play the Blazer style? Two outstanding perimeter shooters like Lillard and CJ. Oh, we have Steph and Klay. So whatever style you want to play, Now, with the addition of Boogie Cousins and the addition of Kevin Durant, the Warriors can play that style better than you, most likely. Mm-hmm. But what I will say about the Lakers and what they have going for them is this. Potentially, if I were drafting of players available in the league, not players available, but just all the players in the league, players to beat the Lakers or the Warriors, my number one pick would be LeBron James. My number two pick would be Kawhi Leonard. If I'm building a team, and they might end up with both those guys. So that's not to say Kawhi's necessarily the second best player in the league. That could be Harden. It could be Russ. Could be Anthony Davis.
No, because you've already removed four or five of the other top 15 or 20 players.
And so if I'm building a team, what I really want is athletic wings who can score. So LeBron and Kawhi check both those boxes. When I look at the Lakers, my concern for them right now is they're saying we're trying to build a tough defensive team. I don't know how good defensively Rajon Rondo is. I know Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's not great defensively. There's a difference between being young or long and athletic and being a great defensive player. And I think Caldwell-Pope and Rondo are athletic and long, but not necessarily great defensive players.
I think the overall toughness part is the number one ingredient. Before you try to establish some type of culture of defense, you mentioned last year, they played with a lot of pace. It's hard to be a tough, hard-nosed team when you play with
pace. That fast.
Because of the spacing on the court, and you're not inviting that half-court grinded out style. So you're saying that they're going to play a different style this year, but you can't change that mentality. And it starts with veteran players who might not be great defenders, but you get them to buy into the overall attitude and where the Lakers have been. Last 5 years not making the playoffs, I think the attitude is the first thing to attack.
Can the Lakers look at what Houston did last year? Houston got close. Houston played them at their game, yes, would you say, and got awfully close to beating them and say, well, what did they do that maybe we can?
Well, that's what the athletic wings that can score. Athletic wings, ISO scorers, and shooting. I would say with LeBron, you obviously have as the most athletic wing in the game or one of. ISO scorers, we'll see as Ingram continues to develop. LeBron obviously is that. Where the Lakers right now have a gaping hole versus Houston is the shooting. Right, is the shooting. I think they have a switchable lineup. One thing we haven't talked about with the Lakers is, what about a small ball Lakers lineup with LeBron at center? Like, they have some interesting lineups they can throw out at you, but they don't have the requisite shooting at the moment to go along with it.
And with LeBron being in the West, I think that will be, it's a tremendous point that you bring up as far as LeBron at the five. Haven't heard a lot of people talking about that, but I can guarantee you, Magic, in the finals, Kareem gets hurt. Magic plays center. I believe that him and LeBron have had conversations. How are we going to proceed in year 16, 17, and 18? Now, if you want to talk about having a huge advantage for LeBron James, you put him at the four, you put him at the five, you're talking about taking a guy off the bounce. There's not that many post players in the NBA, let alone in the Western Conference. So I see him. I like that point. I see LeBron, as he gets older, playing more in the paint as the four and definitely potential minutes at the five.
And then how much does this conversation change if they do get Kawhi? Because if they don't, is this the team as presently constituted that's going to have to go up against the Warriors, or do we anticipate
if they don't
changes?
Get Kawhi, then this is a moot discussion. If they don't get Kawhi, getting to the round of the playoffs where you get to play the Warriors is an accomplishment. Because that would mean you got to either the second or the third round. If you get Kawhi, then you start to be able to do real roster tweaking. Because I do believe what I said 5 minutes ago. The top two picks of all players available in the NBA to beat the Warriors would be LeBron would be my first pick, Kawhi would be my second pick. If you have them both on the same team, then even with Boogie, start to squint a little bit and say, can we pull this off? What are the right pieces around to make this a reality?
All right, we're going to leave it there. We'll discuss this more. Sarah Kustak is going to join us a little bit later on to break all that down. But coming up on the other side, did the New York Giants make the right move putting their faith in a 37-year-old quarterback, Eli Manning? We discuss next. First things first. With the number two pick in the NFL draft, the Giants did not pick quarterback Sam Darnold, quarterback Josh Allen, or quarterback Josh Rosen. They instead went with running back Saquon Barkley. Big Blue deciding to place their faith in 37-year-old quarterback Eli Manning. And don't think that's gone unnoticed by the two-time Super Bowl champ. Eli says it's a, quote, vote of confidence, and he wants to prove him right. All right, Chris, what does Eli need to do to vindicate his team's decision?
This is big for Eli, because if you look at what they went through last year, him personally, because I got a lot of respect for Eli. And I would say that because I know Eli, I know the family, I might have a little more leniency on my critique of Eli than other players. I'm saying I like Eli.
And you have respect for what he's accomplished.
Yes, but it's when you're commentating, you're human. There's certain people that you like. And I like Eli. I like him. I like his personality because I know there's more to him than what he says. The all shucks Eli, you know, that look and everything. And I really do have a lot of respect for what he's accomplished. When the organization is in a position like the Giants, which they're not used to, they're selecting in the top five. And we had the quarterback prospects that we have. It is live and on the board that they have to select the quarterback. When they decide Dave Gettleman, when he comes in and believes, like, man, there's more football left in Eli, we're going to avoid picking this. The team across town, the Jets, they snatch one. All these other teams, they snatched a quarterback. Because if you need a quarterback, this was the year. Next year's draft class in quarterbacks, not to get ahead of us, it's not as promising.
And they won't have the second. They hope that as hell they don't have the second pick next year.
Well, I can guarantee if they're in the top five, Eli is not there.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, because they didn't have the type of season. So it's very important that they establish a style of play. Because not only Eli, the head coach Pat Shurmur, it's his second job. He was a failure there in Cleveland, so he knows the amount of pressure on him. The defense, can you rely on the running game with Barkley and the defense? So for me, what type of team are they going to be? I don't believe the Giants should try to back Eli up 45 times a game and throw the football. The Giants have been best when they've been balanced, when they had a running attack or a short passing game because of the elements. Once you get past Halloween, the leaves begin to change. You need a physical style of football. And you can play physical style on the offensive end, which they haven't done. So that's what my real expectations are for Eli. Because if they don't have a running game, they rely just on the passing game. Offensive line, it should be better than it has been the last couple years. But Eli, no. We want him to throw the ball in the playoff games. In the regular season, I want him to throw the ball about 30 times. In the playoffs, you have to do whatever you have to do. So style of play is the number one thing that I need the Giants to identify and be able to show that.
Listen, first of all, I want to commend you for what you said at the front end, because I've always believed people in this job, we all have biases. And it's impossible to do this job totally unbiased. Your job, I think, is to just be honest with the audience about where your biases fall.
Danny,
you know
Ainge.
What I mean? Danny Ainge for her. Like, I'm from Kansas City. I root for the Chiefs. You tell me maybe I shouldn't root. So when we're talking about the Chiefs, if we ever do on this show, know that I'm from there. And so I might be a little more optimistic at times. So I appreciate the candor there. When I look at the Giants, if I remove the quarterback from it, and I say they have, at the very least, barring catastrophic injury like they dealt with last year, they've got at the very least an average defense. With
yes.
the ability to be a well above average defense.
Mm-hmm.
They have what I would consider A-plus skill position guys. A top three wide receiver, a stud running back, a guy that I believe will be a stud running back, and a tight end.
No, I think it's fair to say he's a stud running back.
He's already a stud running back. Sure, Saquon.
Yes.
And I think an up-and-coming tight end we're going to hear more about in Evan Engram. They spent a ton of money on left tackle. They spent their second-round pick on a left guard. They moved a guy who they had spent a first-round pick at left tackle, Eric Flowers, over to the right side. So I don't know if he'll be good at that, but that's at least a big investment there. So they've got...
He'll be better at right tackle than he was at any other position he's played, especially left
no
tackle.
No question about it. So they've got investments in the offensive line, A-plus skill position guys, and what I would imagine is, at the very least, an average defense. So why would they not be a playoff team? The only reason they wouldn't be, at least in contention for the playoff team, is if their quarterback doesn't play well. And so what's fair expectations? That before Eli's done as quarterback of the Giants, they either make the playoffs a couple times or have another playoff run. Since they won the Super Bowl, it's been 6 years. They've made the playoffs once. There's only been one season in the last decade they won a playoff game. Now that season, they won four of them mm-hmm. to win the damn Super Bowl, his second one. Like, if they don't have a sustained playoff run or a sustained few years of playoff contention, they will look back on the decision not to draft a quarterback as a mistake. Like they
That's fair.
Period, point blank. They will, if, and that'll be determined by the next two, three seasons.
No matter what, everyone's going to look at, most fans are going to look at Eli Manning this year as sort of the focal point of how this mm-hmm. team, the direction this team is going to go in. Just based on what you saw last year, bias or otherwise, I know you only had Odell for a handful of games. Did you see anything in Eli Manning that would say, you know what, the reason they played that way is because of all the injuries? Or, I mean, is there any way you can sort of game plan what he's going to do based on what you saw?
This is the thing about Eli that no one who I've talked to has more confidence in Odell Beckham than Eli Manning does. So when you have that type of talent on the field, it helps the team. I mean, when you don't have them in the locker room, typically people think wide receivers, because they talk a lot and stuff and because some of the things they're involved in, they're distractions. Football teams need wide receivers. They need energy guys. They need guys to be able to bring juice. And OBJ, he does that for Eli. Eli has tremendous confidence that he can even throw the ball to him even when he's covered. But the Giants have been best with Eli when they had balance. There is no doubt OBJ is a special player, and I believe this season will be his best season. I knew what kind of shape he was in last year when he ended up breaking his leg, so I know the kind of torment that he went through. And he does not like the fact that he has not had a long-term contract, so he's mad that he don't have the long-term contract, and when he gets the new long-term contract, he's there to prove that he's worth the money. So he's going to be motivated either way. So I have high expectations for them to be able to get back in the sink and put up tremendous numbers.
And we've seen in the NFL, if you've got a stud wide receiver along with a stud running back or running back group, how dynamic those offenses can be. We've seen what the Falcons with Julio, even when it's been, I don't want to say running back by committee, but Devontae Freeman,
yes,
plus the
Coleman.
Tevin Coleman, like what they could do. Obviously, AB and Antonio Brown. What the Cowboys could do when Dez was at the top of his game when they had DeMarco Murray. Like they, mm-hmm. And I think that Odell's better than Dez ever was, and I think Saquon's going to be better than DeMarco Murray was. But the common denominator with all those teams is Matt Ryan, Big Ben, Romo when he was healthy. Like, you don't have to have Rodgers or Brady or Breeze if you have those other guys. But you've got to have, at the very least, above-average quarterback play, and that's what we got to see from Eli. Was Eli last year a perfect storm of terrible offensive line, your wide receiver breaks his leg, your coach is a disaster, all of it, or was he a part of the disaster? That's what this year is going to determine.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, Danny Ainge doesn't seem to be excited with LeBron.
I got flames for you,
Danny.
Out of
the East. It's going to be good.
I've been waiting for this.
We'd love to talk to you.
I've been waiting for this.
We'll hear from him next on First Things
Jenna's
First.
Brought up Danny Ainge every show.
When he wasn't supposed to be in
for no reason.
Right.
Now he's on the show.
The World Cup final is set after Croatia topped England 2-1 in extra time. My team, England, going home. After an incredible run, though, what a game yesterday, start to finish. CC, how great was this match?
It was a tremendous match. I know my man Nick was concerned about Croatia because of all the extra time, all the energy they spent. But Alexi Lawless told us, don't worry about that. 7 of the 10 goals they scored, Jenna, were after halftime. So the overall endurance, the ability to be able to persevere, that's what we saw in this tournament. Man, greatest tournament that I've seen watching
world
football.
As far as great finishes, no question about it. And Croatia's been a part of 3 of them.
Yes.
Every game they've played in the knockout round, I thought this was going to be their third straight penalty kicks game. I didn't know they're going to win or lose. Like, that was to come back the way they did in the second half and then to win it in extra time. It was absolutely tremendous. And now we get what should be a captivating final, France versus Croatia.
The NFL supplemental draft was yesterday. 5 players entered, 2 selected. The Giants took cornerback Sam Beal from Western Michigan, and Washington picked corner Adonis Alexander out of Virginia Tech. See, can these two guys have an immediate impact?
Well, you can't have enough cover guys. And you're talking about both of these guys, long and lanky as far as their frame, long arms. They should be able to assist teams. Also, watch for the number of young cornerbacks that they try to put in the slot. Because if you look at the number of times that you have to play a nickel defense, Jenna, or a dime defense, Jenna's been studying up on his
shows.
Yes,
absolutely.
Five. Oh, that's six. Yeah. Oh, thank you, CC. So, yes, both of these guys should be contributors, especially the Giants. Watch for the Giants, Beal, and him playing immediately.
I want to talk about Beal and the Giants taking him. I just, from a value standpoint, I really like this job by the Giants because they had the third pick of each round of the supplemental draft. So only two teams could have claimed him in any round, but it ended up being the third round ahead of them. What they are sacrificing to take him is whatever their third round pick ends up being next year. It almost assuredly will not be the third pick. They hope it's the 23rd or the 31st pick, but it'll be later than third. So they sacrifice potentially a mid or late third rounder for a player they're going to get this year at the third pick of the third round. I think it's a great job by them.
To the NBA now. Jimmy Butler might not be a fan of Carl Anthony Towns, but the Timberwolves organization sure is. Reports are that Minnesota and Cat are discussing a max contract extension. Nick, a lot's been said about the effort of Carl Anthony Towns. Are the T-Wolves making the right move investing in him for the long haul?
No question about it. Like, when you get the number one overall pick, yeah, you hope it's LeBron or Anthony Davis. If it's not that, you hope it's Carl Anthony Towns, that next tier of superstar. And they have two number one overall picks on their team. Both guys they gave designated player extensions to, or they want to in Carl Anthony Towns. The Wiggins one, I don't think is going to work out. The Towns one needs to, and I think it will. Yes, you'd like to see him give a little more effort defensively and figure out what's going on in the locker room, but he is a special talent and an all-NBA type of talent.
You really do. You have to secure that. We've seen what happened to the Timberwolves, man, when they had Kevin Garnett, you know, not getting success. Then they had Kevin Love. One of these big guys has got to be able to work out for them. I mean, the people there in the Twin Cities, they love basketball. He's been good there. I don't like the little rumors coming out with other superstars, Nick. That right there. And this is another one of my guys.
I know. You got to figure out what exactly is going on. Is it more of a
talk to the Cat about that.
Yeah, but also keep in mind, Jimmy Butler's been a little prickly in other places. I wonder if it's more about Butler or more about Big Cat.
All right, finally, it was reported that the Lakers thought Lonzo Ball's camp leaked news of his knee injury to hold him out of trade talks. Turns out that those knee issues may be more real than previously thought. Reports are the Lakers are exploring all options, including surgery. Nick, what should the Lakers' approach be with Lonzo Ball, given his injury?
Whichever approach has the least long-term effects on his career. We talked about Jimmy Butler, right? Remember when we were, and I understand slightly different injuries, but I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah.
Remember, Jimmy Butler had a couple of potential ways to deal with his injured meniscus. He took the option that got him on the court as quickly as possible so he'd be back for the playoffs, even though guys like Dwayne Wade and others have said that route potentially has more long-term effects you're going to feel later in your career, as opposed to the route that would have knocked him out for the full rest of the season, but would have been a repair. Instead of the removal for Jimmy Butler. Whatever the doctors say with Lonzo, I am taking the super long view. Not even for this season, but for future seasons. Now, there's no possibility this knocks him out for the year. But if he's not ready by training camp, I'm fine. You have Rondo. This is, to me, a blue chip asset. I'm not doing anything that would jeopardize years 6, 7, 8 for this young man. I am being as cautious as possible with this player.
Obviously, they've made a mistake from the time that he didn't play in his last game to the time we are now. I mean, Jenna, we are
amazingly
13 weeks away from the NBA season starting.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about potentially having a surgery. So all this good work, whatever he did, film study and everything, obviously they're still having problems with the knee. The knee must be still swelling up after he works out. They hadn't been able to get that to stop. So whatever they thought was the issue, obviously they didn't get that fixed up. So for me, this is a problem because when you have a great athlete, you can try to be as patient as you want to. Man, he's got a lot of stuff to prove, and it can only be proven on the basketball court. So I believe this could be long-term to be a problem for the Lakers because now we talked about the last couple days. Well, Rondo, did they sign him as a starter? Did they sign him as an insurance player? Now the Rondo signing makes a whole bunch of sense because they don't know if Lonzo will be ready.
You mentioned he's got a lot to prove. He also has a lot to improve on. Like, he's got a lot to prove and a lot to improve on.
You can't do that.
No.
Right.
Unless you're on the court. We've seen Josh Hart playing in the summer league. He's a second-year player. Man, I tell you, Nick, you won't see more improvement in the most players between year one and two. That is the biggest year that we have seen guys grow in the sport because they have 1 year of maturity. They have 1 year of being around the league. And typically we see that they get beyond their rookie year jitters and getting used to the physicalness of the sport.
And they have a year of seeing how guys at their level or higher than them athletically take advantage of them. A year of finally
a scouting report on themselves.
Exactly right. Finally, a year of playing basketball where they're not the best or the one of the two best guys in every game they play.
But it's hard to convince a young guy on a team that's going to be really, really focused on next year with LeBron on it, on a team where you just hired a guy that plays your exact position to say, you know what, we want you to take the route that's going to require you to take the most time to get back on the court. Could it be a year, though? Could it be the whole season?
No. I don't think it's not that type of, from everything I understand, again, like I haven't talked to any doctors and I'm reporting on this, but from everything I've read, it went from something they were sure he would be back by this time from to why is it still lingering? Not something, it's a significant injury, it could be a year type of injury. The point is there's no convincing you have to do. Like, he can't check himself into games. He can't put himself on the active roster. Like, whatever the doctors say that it needs to be done with Lonzo, the team can make sure it gets done, and then Luke Walton can make sure he doesn't play until he is not 80%, 100%.
His first training camp with LeBron James is critical to his overall growth. Also, last year, he was hurt in training camp. He had a bad hamstring. So you don't want to keep missing those training camps. So that's the foundation for the regular season.
All right, moving on. The Boston Celtics don't need reminding what happened last season. They lost to LeBron and the Lakers. I mean, yeah, LeBron and the Cavs in seven games. I'm getting way ahead of myself. If LeBron wasn't playing in the East, wouldn't that be a big weight lifted off Danny Ainge and the Celtics? Oh, wait. Suddenly, with LeBron out West, the chances of the Celtics winning the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since Nick Wright was wearing a Paul Pierce onesie have vastly improved. But my guy, Danny Ainge, is thinking ahead.
What are your thoughts when LeBron James leaves the Eastern Conference and just kind of the run he put together going to the finals 8 straight times?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
What was your reaction?
What do I care about the Eastern Conference? I don't really care about that. You know, we're trying to win championships, and, you know, you still have to play LeBron. And I think that there's a lot of good teams in the East.
Nick, you don't laugh at that.
Well, I'm sorry. I wasn't even laughing at what he said. I was laughing that is the man that you've had a 30-year crush on. I'm just looking at him. I'm like, what part? What happened? Like, where? Like, what?
Maybe his hair was different.
What was going on? I apologize. Go ahead. We can get back to the television program. Sorry, I was just watching. I was like, really?
Still doesn't follow me
different
on Twitter.
Strokes for different
folks. I still like
you,
Danny Ainge. I still like you. Right. You buying that Danny Ainge doesn't care that LeBron left the Eastern Conference, Nick?
No. And it would be idiotic not to care. It would be, if LeBron wasn't there last year, you go to the finals. Period, point blank. Like, you go through Giannis in round one, the Sixers and Embiid in round two, the Raptors in round three, and then you go to the NBA finals. We talk about how LeBron has just had the Raptors number, right? Since, in the last 8 years, he's beat them, knocked them out of the playoffs 3 times. He's knocked Danny Ainge's teams out of the playoffs 5 times. It's LeBron and his run in the Heat that made Danny Ainge decide to tear it all down.
He had to.
He had to. Like, it is, LeBron has been, there's no team that LeBron has knocked out in the playoffs more in these last 8 years than the Boston Celtics. Not the Pacers, not the Bulls, not the Raptors. It's, LeBron has been the mountain to climb. And the idea that it's not an enormous relief to know now that if you were to at some point climb that mountain, that you now don't have another mountain to climb afterwards, it's ridiculous. Like, he's not telling the truth here.
He's not telling the truth. Not unless he has talked to the commissioner, Adam Silver, and Adam Silver has told him, you know, don't worry about the East. We're going to have open seating.
Right, 1 through 16.
Yeah, we're going to go 1 through 16 now. We're not going to be East and West. But as long as Danny Ainge has been in the NBA, it's been about the East and the West. It's very important who's in your conference. You can't have a dream of, I want to lift a banner with not knowing. How am I going to put my team to strategize against Toronto, against the other teams in the East? And, oh, man, wow, what a relief. Don't have to strategize now against Cleveland. You tell me he wasn't building this team to beat LeBron James before?
Right. That's the other thing is you can't build the perfect roster if you know in order to win a championship, one of the steps, not the final step, one of the steps is the hardest player in the league to guard. Like, this is something that the Raptors never passed LeBron, but we would have seen it with them. They spent so many resources in trying to find a guy to check LeBron that let's say they had beaten LeBron one day. Would those resources have been the right resources to spend to finish out the marathon? Like, the Celtics wouldn't have prioritized Marcus Morris if you don't have to go stop LeBron James. Like, you build your roster to get through your conference, your biggest rival, and then if you get to the championship, you play it out. It's only once you're at the top of your conference do you start building your roster to beat the other, to beat the Warriors, to beat whomever's going to be on the other side of the bracket.
And there's nothing wrong with being honest. And in this interview, Danny Ainge was not being honest. He had a pause right there, and he said, what are you asking me? No, Danny, you know exactly what I'm asking you. LeBron's not in the East now. It'd be no different than if Magic, when they had the battle of Magic and the Lakers against the Celtics, those classic battles. If Magic left, it'd been like, wow, man, are you going to miss those battles with Magic? Absolutely, because he's not getting another banner without winning the East. Right. LeBron's not in the East now, so I know him and his staff. Well, I know Brad Stevens is glad. All right? So Danny, we're going to take Danny at his word. Oh, Danny, you know, he hadn't think about it, but I know Brad Stevens is glad.
How about Jason Tatum? You think Jason Tatum's glad that he's not going to – that they are now in a position where, to win a championship, you only have to beat LeBron or the Warriors. Not both of them.
Right.
Like, this is – I don't know if you've ever done mountain climbing. You know, the Himalayan mountain range.
Very well.
So, like, you start with Cho-Oyo, you got to Makalu.
Obviously.
And then at some point you get to Everest.
Everest.
LeBron's been there Everest. And had they peaked Everest, it'd been like, oh, wait. We got it. There's Everest 2.0 after this. Now there's just the one. Now you only have to get through the one. You go up. The idea that you don't care that LeBron is on the other side, no one believes it. And Budenholzer, by the way, the coach of the Bucks, he was asked something similar. We'll talk about him later.
And
he was honest. He was like, of course it's great. Of course it's great. I might have the best player in the conference.
Yeah, I got a chance.
I don't get this comment. I just flatly don't get it.
How many athletes in press conferences and scrums like that? Athletes, general managers. All right. So what is he supposed to say in that situation?
We just told you what he was supposed to say.
Okay. So he says they've won gold. The goal is to win the title. We only have one big thing in front of us.
Right. But you got to recognize what is on the path to the goal. What is on the path to the title?
Well, sure.
Are the Steelers going to be happy the day Tom Brady retires?
What?
Or are they just going to say, no, we just got to win a Super Bowl? Yeah, but they have been your roadblock. This has always been your roadblock. And by the way, the Celtics now, I mean, they are, if we're going to say any team's a contender other than the Warriors, they're one of them.
And if he was really in Danny Ainge mode, the Danny Ainge that I grew to appreciate when he was playing, he would say, you know something? We're going to miss the competition. Because that has been a great competition.
Okay.
He's put him out 5 times, but at least acknowledge what has happened. And LeBron James has dominated you in the Eastern Conference for a decade.
I just really hope people think I don't like the Celtics. I really hope when the Celtics do finally win the East, because I don't think it'll be this year, that's the year the Lakers win the West. And LeBron
so
just has to knock their ass out again.
One more time. All right, we're going to hear much, 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 much more from Danny Ainge. We're going to run that entire interview like 16 times in a row on the other side.
That's on Jenna's special post-show show.
Right, coming
up. You can
up,
catch on FS3.
Are people sleeping on Dak and the Cowboys next on First Things First? Let's move on to the NFL. One of the teams stirring chatter, the Dallas Cowboys, plenty of question marks surrounding their offense this season. According to ESPN's Bill Barnwell, they have the worst receiving core in football and the third worst collection of skill position players in the whole league. CeCe, can the Cowboys overcome their lack of receiving weapons?
Oof.
Loaded question.
My goodness. I was trying to think of, when you call someone the worst, I was trying to defend them. Like, no one wants to be called the worst. I was trying to get a group.
Yeah.
that I think has the potential to be the worst. Their defense. The only way that I can see that is their defense has to play to a level that we didn't expect. And I'm not only just talking about where they rank in defense, but for the style for which they're going to play. They have to be one of the top 10 teams as far as turnovers. If they can create extra turnovers, which give you extra possessions, because, man, Dallas is going to run the football. But if I can put them on a short field, if I can keep their defense only playing about 28 minutes a game because of the ball control, because that big offensive line, the Cowboys, is eating up time of possession, and that defense is creating pressure that forces turnovers. So now that gets extra possessions, which I believe that the wide receiving core, they can take advantage of those extra possessions. And I believe it's very, very important, the first month of the season, because when people are telling you, man, this is the worst group, your overall confidence, because they ain't got a whole bunch of ballers. They ain't got no guys got, hey, man, you know, I got 200-yard games. I got a couple touchdowns. No. Alan Hearns, I got 1,000-yard season, and he had that a couple years ago. He's coming off a knee injury in Jacksonville where they gave up on him. I believe he's their best receiver.
Which is a problem, flatly.
If Alan Hearns
coming off a knee injury is, you say you believe it. I think it's unquestioned. He's their best receiver. That is a problem. Bill Barnwell is one of my favorites. Bill Barnwell on football, Zach Lowe on basketball. They used to both write on Grantland, and so I've been following him for a while. I want to read you one particular passage from this little piece where he ranks the Cowboys where he does. The Cowboys are left with what must surely be the worst receiving core in football. The four tight ends vying to replace Jason Witten have 94 combined receiving yards. Not 94 combined catches, 94 combined yards, not last year, in their career. That's all done by Jeff Swaim, who nobody had mentioned Jeff Swaim until the day Jason Witten retired, and you were like, who's his backup? Like, this is, if the Cowboys have drafted well enough and have spent to the cap consistently enough and have solid enough theoretically quarterback play that they should be in the discussion of not only playoff but Super Bowl contenders. And if they are a Super Bowl contender, I tried to go down the list. Would this be the worst group of pass catchers to make a Super Bowl in modern times? Like I was thinking about, what about the group Cam took in 2015? But they did, that was Ted Ginn's great year. Like,
yes.
And they had Greg Olsen. And Greg Olsen was a very... Okay, so, like, what about the 06 Bears? That team that was quarterbacked by Rex Grossman.
Sexy
throw that
Rexy
out. Like, Musin Muhammad, Bernard Barry...
But still better careers.
And
guys who had 1,000-yard seasons.
And a great defense. A defense, yes, that was just... It seemed like every other week that you're Peanut Tillman. It was going to be a
Urlacher,
strip.
Yes.
I mean, so many defensive scores. And, oh, yeah, by the way, the greatest, in my eyes, kick returner ever back there to give them extra points in Devin Hester. Like, the teams that have done... The 2000 Ravens, when we were discussing this before the show, you meant, like, Kadri Ismail, Brandon Stokley, our friend Shannon Sharpe's there, but it's later in his career. Mm-hmm. Like, but that Ravens... One of the greatest defenses
ever
in the history of football. Like, if you are going to get to high levels in the playoffs with weapons like this, it's usually because you have an elite defense. We're talking about the Cowboys having a pretty good defense if it works out.
And when we talked about the Giants, you said the one thing that's going to work for Eli or for any quarterback is to have high-energy receivers. You got to have high-energy receivers. Okay. Dak is coming into a year where he needs to play well, but he doesn't have any relationship really with these guys that he's going to be throwing the ball to.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not any high-energy guys that are going to help pump up this offense and get them going.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult because given the NFL now, people talk about the lack of practice and everything else, you got to talk about style. They are throwing the ball at an all-time high, and an all-time high successfully. Also, defensively, it dictates to the defense, you must have a great nickel. So Dallas, do they play two tight ends? Do they play three receivers? Brian Billick, my great offense coordinator, also head coach in the NFL, he taught me, Chris, it's a numbers game. If I got three receivers that's better than their nickel coverage, I'm going to put the three receivers on the field. Dallas, they can't say that because the way Zeke is set up and with that offensive line, the best thing for them is to run a one-back set with three receivers on the field to make them play nickel. Then you can have that big offensive line just roll off on that small defense. That's how they could be successful. But when you don't have quality wide receivers, because all they got to do now is play, I'll play all three of your wide receivers man-to-man. And I'll put seven guys in the box. You're going to have to run against that. So they're going to get a lot of man-to-man coverage. All right? Zeke and them are still going to have to try to be able to win ball games because you cannot depend on their wide receivers.
Do you realize, just the generic you, how, I guess, I don't want to, what low expectations people must have for your wide receivers and tight ends to rank your skill position guys third worst when Zeke is the running back? Think about that.
You know, because he knows that. Bill knows that when he writes the article.
Right. Bill obviously knows that this is an evaluation of running backs, tight ends, wide receivers combined into one group. Mm-hmm. He knows they have an A-plus running back. And he says third worst collection in the league. Like, that is, it's almost like what the people that don't like what the Lakers are doing this offseason, saying the Lakers had a bad offseason. Do you know how bad your offseason must have been if you sign LeBron and people are like, we give it a C-? Like, that must, I mean, if you have Zeke and you give your skill position guys 30th out of 32, that's disastrous.
Well, Jenna, it goes back to a point that you made. That's what I was trying to whisper to you. Jenna was always worried about Dez. Chris, what kind of information out there on Dez? Why ain't they signed Dez? Why didn't Dez sign with anyone else? Now, we're in the second week of July. Dez Bryant's still not signed. Bill Barnwell, he writes this article about Dallas knows their wide receiving core is not going to be good without Dez. Man, they must have did not want Dez in the building to have to put that wide receiving crew out there and for Dez not to be signed with another team. Doesn't make him look good.
Right.
Dallas Cowboys got the worst wide receiving group. I'm taking Bill on his word.
Yeah.
And Dez Bryant is still not working. So I hear you as far as, man, they must have a lot of information out there about Dez that's not public information.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up, why Magic Johnson shouldn't get too much credit for the Lakers roster. We explain next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, we're joined by Fox basketball analyst Sarah Kustok. Sarah's also going to be doing some football for us this
year. Ever-expanding portfolio, Ms. Kustok.
I'm trying. I'm trying to keep up with everyone at the table.
Look where your life has gone since I started chasing you. You want to have your career go upwards? Have a brother chase you
out of a Whole Foods.
Run.
It is such an inside joke, but just laugh at it.
Yes.
Sarah, when you sign LeBron James to a four-year deal, you literally cannot have a bad offseason. It's just the rule. The Lakers have LeBron. Do they also have some roster questions? Sure, but they have LeBron. And because of LeBron, they now have Rajon Rondo, Lance Stephenson, and JaVale McGee. Just ask Magic Johnson.
LeBron's won championships. He's been to 8 straight finals. I mean, you think Rob and I are not going to ask them? No, we're going to definitely ask him his opinion because he knows those players better than us.
There's a fine line between asking someone for their opinion and then letting them sort of seep into that general manager role. But what do you think? Is it a good idea to let LeBron have a say in roster moves?
Yes, absolutely. And I know there's been a lot of jokes, discussions over the years of his time in Cleveland, how LeBron was the GM, some of the contracts, and the aftermath of how things played out. But in this circumstance, you have not made the playoffs for the last 5 seasons. You sign the best basketball player in the world to a 4-year deal. I would absolutely expect that they want to know what he thinks, mm-hmm. what type of players he wants alongside of him. And I think the caveat of all of this, you look at Lance Stephenson, you look at JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, you could say different things about the players they are, what they'll bring. It's 1-year deals.
Mm-hmm.
1-year deals. The Lakers are also setting themselves up for the 2019 free agency class.
Yes.
So, regardless of what happens, and you can go through each of these guys, but it's 1 year that they are committing to.
A question for you and Nick. Let's remove LeBron from it. Let's just say the Lakers go after, say LeBron stayed in Cleveland. The Lakers
Paul
go
George.
After, they go after any of the other top players, Kawhi, Paul George, any of them. Do you think Magic Johnson sits down with them and asks them, hey, Kawhi, what kind of players you like to play with? What do you think about the players that we have? What do you think about the way we're doing things? What kind of offense you like to run? Do you guys think that Magic would do that for even players like Kawhi?
Yes, I do.
I think this is a thing we talk about all the time. I think in the NBA, your best player should have a say on the coach – if he doesn't like him, should, unless it's a Hall of Fame established coach, should have a say on teammates. I think...
Now, I don't believe every top player, Nick, should have that type of say. It depends on what is their basketball IQ.
Sure.
How do they go about their business? Like, are they going to be about trying to have their friends? Or are they have they really surveyed? Because every superstar doesn't have the same knowledge of the league that others have. LeBron... I know this personally, being at practices, you've seen him. We talk about him being a savant on the basketball court, but also his overall study, his ability to remember sets that other teams run, what they run in certain situations, him calling out things. I went to a practice when LeBron was young, when Shaq was there, and I was friends with Shaq, and I was asking about LeBron. He's like, man, this guy is unbelievable. The amount of information he knows for a young player, what he remembers. When Detroit tried to do certain things to him in the playoff, he remembered the certain play calls. If they call out a color scheme, he can correlate to that to a number. So, yes, you have to realize the asset is not only the basketball player, but it's also the basketball mind. And Magic and Rob Pelinka, I believe, are doing the right thing by tapping into that.
So, I might surprise some people with this. This makes me a little nervous. I think LeBron James should have veto power. I do not think they need to say to LeBron James, give me a list. I think if they have come, it is Rob Pelinka and Magic's and the scouting department's job to, and the analytics department's job, to figure out which players are available at the right price that they think will fit the style they're going to play. I have no problem with them, once they've compiled the list, going to LeBron and saying, anyone on here that you want crossed off? That, I think, works. But what I've seen, listen, LeBron is an A-plus in a lot of things across basketball. Evaluating how good other players still are is not something that I think is his strongest suit.
And it's always a problem for current players.
Yes.
Because what our memory is of other players, I remember this, and when I retire from football, man, people had me playing fantasy football. Man, you were a great fantasy football player, Chris. Man, I was in a couple different leagues. The first few years, I was the worst. Man, pick this guy. Man, you got to pick Anquan Boldin. Man, he's got durability. Right. Like, because guys who I knew and guys who I like.
Right.
So
of course.
That's what you end up attracting.
So interesting.
Yeah, but that's real because he's human. And you could see that with LeBron and some of his relationships, the guys who got contracts and everything. Mm-hmm. So I like that theory.
But to me, then you look at a guy like Lance Stephenson, and that's where I think a lot of eyebrows were raised, because this was someone who no one probably ever would have pegged would be a guy that LeBron would want on his team. But that goes back, I covered the Cavs Pacer series this past year, and it was interesting because LeBron was asked about Lance a lot, how he was an agitator, what he did. LeBron still spoke with such a high amount of respect for him, the type of confidence, the type of competitor mm-hmm. he was, the mm-hmm. fierceness that he brings. I think it's a fair deal that they did with Lance. Again, it goes back to a one-year deal, but I think LeBron, I would assume Magic and Rob spoke with them about different guys. I'm not sure LeBron just said, I want XYZ.
I don't think he did.
Right.
No. And I wasn't trying to act like that's what happened.
Right.
I think they had targeted
a group of players and went over that group of players with LeBron, you know, mm-hmm. on this sheet. These are players where we have interest in. What do you think?
Is there any concern that if LeBron starts being consulted on general manager decisions or picking players, then that bleeds into a little bit, well, he's got more power than, say, Luke Walton, or if he doesn't like the way the direction
he
of the team is going.
He has more power than Luke Walton.
Okay, but does that bleed into the direction of the team or how successful the team can be, or a balance of power between the general manager and Magic and Rob and Luke and
LeBron? Well, this is the thing in the NBA. The power is with the players, all right? The players got the guaranteed money. Unless you are Pop, unless you're Brad Stevens, he's not even on that corner where he would like to throw his career around. This is the way the NBA has been run for years. It's about the players and about what the players want. Magic Johnson has been associated with a couple coaches. All of a sudden, now they're not his coach anymore. So this wouldn't be new. We tend to forget, and we bang on LeBron for him being involved in decision-making. This has been part of the NBA for the last 40 years.
I also think the jury's still out. Is Magic, we know the player Magic Johnson was, is he a good team president? Rob Pelinka, This is his first time as a general manager. What can he do? I believe that this is all about Magic understanding the asset that he needed to get in LeBron James and massaging the situation. And I think that Magic Johnson is savvy enough to understand as the season goes on, as the tenure with LeBron goes on, he's going to continue to make decisions. LeBron has power. He'll listen to LeBron. I don't think he's just a free-for-all. LeBron, you tell me what to do.
Yeah, but you also have to give the Lakers and the organization, Jenny Buss, yes, making the tough call as far as her brother being involved in day-to-day operations. When they decide to go to Pelinka and Magic, since then, they've made some good decisions.
Yeah.
All right? They are good as far as salary cap. They got some good young players that other teams want. And also, not only do they have LeBron James, they have a guy that said, I want to be a Laker. But then everybody said, wait, you only want to go to the Lakers? Well, I'll go to the Clippers because Kawhi's that kind of guy. Right. But he did want to go to the Lakers, and it had to do with not only going home, but they did have Magic there and some good young players.
My only caution would be on any of this is I saw this happen 4 years ago. I really think LeBron was just watching an NCAA tournament game and saw Shabazz Napier go off and fires off a tweet, my favorite point guard in the draft. And the Miami Heat, in an effort to keep LeBron James in Miami, overdrafted Shabazz Napier. Shabazz Napier was drafted because of that tweet, I truly believe. And LeBron left. And that, by the way, it's not like Shabazz, well, they picked a great player for what they needed. No, they didn't. The point you're making, though, about the one-year deals is the most important one. And for this is not a perfect roster for LeBron. It's long, somewhat athletic, some playmaking, but not enough shooting. But you are not going to find the exact perfect roster when you are only signing one-year deals and when you are trying to maintain maximum flexibility. I do think they're going to get Kawhi. And you said the jury's still out on Magic. If the only thing Magic ever does is get LeBron James, that's still a more than passing grade. If they end up with Magic and Kawhi, with LeBron and Kawhi, then, I mean, he can just chill for the next few years and yes, let Pelinka yes, and the scouting department do the rest. That will be an A-plus job. Right now, it's not a perfect roster, but with the types of deals they were giving out, it wasn't going to be.
You're
going to
know when the Lakers and Magic have arrived, when they have the feeling like Golden State and like Magic has had, like LeBron is at other places. When guys decide to turn down substantial money and say, you know, so I'm going to come there because I believe we can win. And I believe they're not too far off from having that. LeBron said he wanted to be in L.A. because he signed there. Kawhi has said he wants to be in L.A. And a lot of that has to do with Magic being there. So I believe they will continue to add pieces. I like the way the organization is right now.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.